Hello, and welcome to episode 142 of the Sea Control Podcast, hosted by the Center for International Maritime Security. I'm Matthew Marighi, your senior producer for Sea Control, and on this week's episode, we're joined by Professor Kate Walsh of the United States Naval War College for a discussion about ocean clusters and maritime innovation. We talk about what ocean clusters are, their effect on maritime security, and how different cluster models used by the United States and China are affecting global security. We'll get started with this eye-opening interview after a brief word about our organization.
SIMSEC brings you the best content on maritime security, technology, history, and international affairs. Sign up to become a member today by visiting www.cimsec.org/about/membership. Join us today.
And we're back. As I mentioned at the top, we're here with Professor Kate Walsh of the United States Naval War College. Kate, thanks very much for being with us on Sea Control today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Matt.
So as is Sea Control tradition, please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background and what sort of things happened to you from the start of your career to get you to where you are now.
Sure. As you mentioned, I teach at the U.S. Naval War College. I'm an associate professor of national security affairs there. And what I teach to our officers and others is policy analysis, which is basically policy decision making in the United States and how it works or doesn't work in some cases. I am also an affiliate with the China Maritime Studies Institute, where I continue my research work on China. I came to the War College as a former think tanker and consultant working in Washington, D.C., where I've been working on China issues since 1990. But in 1997, I was offered a project actually for the Commerce Department to look at China in the sense of technology transfers. And so that's where I started off on a different area of research, focusing on science and technology and innovation with regard to China. And I've really stuck with that issue since then because I found it fascinating and interdisciplinary and really, you know, tied to our times and globalization and international security issues. In 2013 or thereabouts, I started to find in my research on China some references to something called the blue economy. And I started asking around what that was, and I really didn't get any good answers. So I found it very intriguing, and I found since then that this idea of a blue, I think ocean or marine or maritime, blue economy is a concept that China and others are developing, and it really got me intrigued, and I've been working more specifically on that issue as it fits well with my China work at the Maritime Studies Institute. I should say, too, that anything I say here today, of course, is I have to disclaim as a federal government employee, these are my views, and my views only. I don't speak for the Navy or the U.S. government at all.
Perfect. So let's dive a little bit more into the idea of the blue economy, which I personally have come across a fair bit in my graduate studies and my professional work at the Fletcher School. But I've noticed the same trend that there is sort of a general lack of awareness of what exactly the blue economy is. So you can talk about economic activity in the oceans, but obviously the oceans are very big and so is its potential. So tell us a little bit about more about the blue economy. What is it? What kind of industries are involved in it? And how have you found that to be relevant to your maritime work?
Sure. Well, one of the challenges is, as you suggest, there's a lot of different terminology in this field, whether you call something a blue economy or the United States in the past has called it the ocean economy or the marine economy. The terminology is not quite set. So it's often difficult in the U.S., Chinese or other contexts to know exactly what people are talking about. But more or less, I think that the concept is around clusters and an ocean or maritime or marine cluster where industries and people working in a certain sector, in this case, it would have to do with fishing or fisheries or shipbuilding, something to do with coastal or ocean or maritime marine issues, are clustered in a regional area. And looking at the dynamics where they exist or trying to create the dynamics where these different actors and interests would interact. My view is I think this builds on earlier academic studies looking at places like Silicon Valley and really what makes that cluster, if you will, of innovation work in some cases, as in Silicon Valley, and not so well in other cases. So some of that early research in the 1990s, or pretty early days of globalization, go back to Annalise Exanian and Chris Lecuyer and others looking at just innovation I think the ocean cluster, a blue economy idea, builds on that builds it out further in the sense of it's not just innovation that's focused, but there's also in ocean clusters and blue economy efforts, a component of innovation, but also of conservation, and to differing degrees, which we'll get into. But so there's the industry aspect, there's the innovation aspect, and then there's the conservation aspect. And so almost, I think, whatever you call it these days, and that's not fixed, when people are talking about an ocean economy or a blue economy or an ocean cluster, I think that's what they have in mind generally, but with different emphases. Some of the industry sectors I mentioned, oil and gas, shipbuilding, fishing, fisheries, also NGOs, non-governmental organizations involved in conservation efforts, government departments, including navies, coast guards, and others. In the blue parlance or ocean, it's really anyone having to do something that has to do with, some people would say, anything wet, or anything ocean or coastal or water. So again, the terminology and definitions differ, but generally that's, I think, what people are referencing these days.
So you mentioned a couple of different time periods. So you mentioned the research being done on Silicon Valley in the 1990s, and you mentioned basically stumbling across this in 2013. So from your research that you've done since you've discovered the blue economy and the idea of ocean clusters, how long has this cluster concept been around? Is this something that's new, or is this kind of a new branding for a existing system that's been around for a long time and just either was called something else or went unnoticed?
Yeah, I'm still investigating this, as I think you are as well and others. So you know, this is my best understanding, and if any of your listeners know better, they'll let us know. But my sense is that the ocean economy, ocean clusters, is building on this earlier research, but focused on an area that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, which is the ocean or blue or marine maritime sector. I think my sense is that that only goes back to about the late 2000s era, maybe about 2010 or so, is the earliest I've seen it, because I've been focusing mainly on China's blue economy concept, and that definitely dates back to a formal policy by Hu Jintao in 2010. I think China built on this idea from earlier work in Europe and in the United States, so dating it exactly is difficult, but I think the ocean economy, ocean cluster idea is relatively still new, and I think that's why some of these definitional issues are problematic, and just trying to figure out where some of the lines are between marine and maritime and ocean and blue. It's a real world problem. I was at an event just last month, and some of these definitional issues were raised because it really hasn't been decided, even just in the United States, much less more broadly. So really a new field, I think, which is exciting, at least to me, to be involved in early days, relatively, of a new area of investigation.
Have, through the course of your research, have you discovered why in particular that this maritime, you know, and ocean economy issues have gone unnoticed? I mean, I think a lot of our listeners for this podcast, by virtue of being interested in maritime security, are already pretty literate in ocean issues, at least a fair bit. But why do you think then the broader sort of academic enterprise has kind of traditionally ignored this area until recently?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't think I have the definitive answer to that. My sense is that a lot of these actors are there, the interests are there, the industry is there, but I think the idea of a cluster or a network or an ecosystem is what's new. And so what I'm seeing even regionally here in Rhode Island is, you know, people interested in developing a cluster and basically saying, hey, we already have the parts that go into a cluster, the academics, the government researchers, the industries, the entrepreneurs, the, you know, the key industries involved. But what we don't have is an approach to network and connect these different players in a way that is beneficial to all players. And of course, there's a natural resistance among some of these actors, say, you know, ocean researchers and fishermen, who sometimes are in competition with each other over use of the ocean or water resources nearby. You know, so it takes work. You know, these things don't tend to necessarily happen organically. Sometimes they do, which is an advantage, but they don't necessarily. And I think there's an interest as globalization has been progressing to take that advantage of connecting people to each other in a way that, you know, that sort of Silicon Valley idea where, you know, you cooperate with each other, and that brings new ideas and new opportunities, new entrepreneurial innovative efforts come to the fore. And so my sense is that some of that is what's going on, because, of course, these industries are not necessarily new. What's new is that they're in some sense a cluster. But of course, when I look at China, I mean, you ask about origins, you know, China's first special economic zone, which is a form of a cluster, dates back to 1979. So really, you know, the idea isn't necessarily new, but I think the focus on the ocean and this added aspect of blue conservation of these assets in a way that serves everyone's interests ultimately in the long term, because, of course, the ocean is already under some threat due to climate change and overfishing and so on. I think this has led to a greater focus on the ocean as an area of study.
So you've mentioned geopolitical entities of varying sizes, ranging from the world's most populous country, China, to the smallest state in the United States of Rhode Island. So clearly the ocean cluster concept is happening in a lot of different places of sizes and shapes and forms. So from your analysis that you've seen so far globally, which areas, whether it's countries or cities or regions, have you found to have the most interesting or dynamic or well-developed or emerging ocean cluster systems so far?
Well, again, I started my research really on China itself because I've been studying innovation in China, and the cluster model is very important there. So I would put China high on the list because they've been thinking about this and working towards it for almost about a decade now. And other countries are looking to China, in fact, for some of their expertise, including countries in Africa. So to some extent, China is a big player here, not only because of their size, but because of their interest for some period of time, which under Xi Jinping has actually just recently been enhanced. And I'll talk about that later. But also, of course, the United States. We have a very different approach than China, but in the United States, the idea of a cluster and an ocean economy or a maritime economy is not new. San Diego and other parts of California, Los Angeles and Monterey, they've been studying this idea of a blue economy or ocean cluster, San Diego being particularly strong. They have really a virtual network of companies called the Maritime Alliance, where companies involved in any kind of maritime industry are connected to each other and trying to promote and foster and collaborate on opportunities. In fact, giving a lot of advice to other countries now as well in Europe and elsewhere. Europe, of course, the whole concept of the blue economy started in Europe. And so a number of different countries there are pursuing this in their own way. Iceland comes up quite a lot. I haven't been to Iceland or studied their cluster very much yet, but Iceland is prominent in other Scandinavian countries. Ireland has a blue economy effort underway. And so really it's a global enterprise. A number of countries in, other than China in the Pacific and in small developing island states. So this is really a developing country issue, coastal states in particular, but not only coastal states, and also developed countries. So, you know, the attraction, I think, is universal, that you have greater industry, greater innovation, and more conservation. And I think this is going to be a growing area of study for even more countries. In the United States, of course, there's a number of different pockets. New England, outside of just Rhode Island, but New England, there's a New England ocean cluster started recently up in Maine that crosses borders up there. And of course, parts of Massachusetts and Rhode Island, Alaska has an ocean cluster effort underway. And so in the United States, a lot of these are more local efforts that sort of people finding each other and sharing lessons learned and so on. Other countries, it tends to be more of a top-down, state-driven industrial policy or strategy or a mix of the two. So, you know, as I start looking for other examples to compare China to, I'm finding quite a bit of this type of activity and for similar reasons.
You mentioned a bit during that description sort of different approaches to making these ocean clusters in those different geographies. So obviously the US and China you mentioned are the ones that have the largest, most well-developed, and they're also, from what you sort of implied, the most different. So what would you say is the biggest difference between the US approach to building ocean clusters and the Chinese approach to the same thing?
Sure. I alluded to it already that China's system is very much and has been very much of a top-down dynamic in terms of trying to foster, facilitate innovation. The plan comes from Beijing and is trickled down to the province and local level. And the same thing with the ocean or blue economy efforts in China. In the United States, it does tend to be more organic, more locally driven. Some stories that I've heard in different places, when I asked, why did you start the cluster or the blue economy effort? Because, we were already collaborating. There was already something happening. There was clearly opportunity there. So much more of a organic opportunity arising, people trying to be entrepreneurial and pursue that. And that, again, that story is repeated in a number of different parts in the country that I've talked to. In fact, there's a Center for the Blue Economy out in Monterey, and that was one of the questions I asked them. How did you start this when I and other people didn't even know what it was? And so really it's just taking the opportunity and seeing that these actors, these interests are already there. What's lacking is a coordination and collaboration. And it takes really somebody to start that. And so in San Diego, for instance, the Maritime Alliance, really a virtual network started by this fellow, Michael Jones, who's doing a lot of speaking events currently here in this region, frankly, talking to people about their experience and trying to promote industry, but really just a virtual network and trying to get people connected so that it helps the local area. And again, now people, we're finding each other. I know in Rhode Island, there's an effort going on to develop an ocean cluster here. And it also has an international linkage where one of our local universities has a sister city relationship in China. And so, in an age of global information, global economic collaboration, in an age of increasingly global science and technology, the barriers are no longer there. And what matters is the networking of and sharing of information. And I think that's what we're seeing actually happening.
What would you say then is the most pressing or the most relevant aspect of the ocean cluster model, whether it's in the U.S., China, or elsewhere, for the ideas of maritime security and national security? What sort of do-outs or relationships or potentially for track two diplomacy, what sort of way do you see these ocean clusters fitting into the broader maritime security sphere that we all work in?
Building on what I was just talking about in terms of global networking, to my mind, to some extent, this is a cooperative opportunity with China and others, but also a necessary one and a competition in terms of who does this better. Because the ocean is becoming more important as the population of the globe increases, as food and energy and mineral resources and so on are becoming a greater competition, as countries like China and India, large countries, are developing very quickly, the ocean is being looked at as more of a resource in many ways and still very much unexplored. So there's tremendous opportunity for cooperation, but also competition in terms of who is going to be able to better, I use the word exploit carefully here, exploit in the sense of understand what opportunities the ocean provides. And one of the differences between the United States and China that I found is that Americans tend to look at the ocean in a sense of tourism, as recreation, as beach going, as well as industry. In China, it's a very different perception, China being very much a land-based country and mentality for a very long time. And of course, is now moving out to see more and more. But China tends to look at the ocean as an extension of the land. And so when we think of the ocean, we may think of Jacques Cousteau and ocean exploration. We have a conservation mindset, at least to some extent. And so when you talk about the ocean economy or the blue economy in American terms, that conservation piece is very prominent, as well as the industrial and the innovative aspects. When you talk to the Chinese about the ocean or blue economy, conservation is a last priority. It is there. It is part of the concept and the model, but it's not a priority. What is a priority is industry and innovation. And so there's opportunity for cooperation, but the competition, I think, in terms of who is able to exploit, and again, I say this in a conservation-minded way as well, what the ocean has to offer, I think is going to be have a tremendous economic advantage. On the science and technology side, of course, this is a consideration when we talk about U.S.-China relations in the South China Sea, for instance, or in the Arctic, or even the Antarctic, and some of the fundamental disagreements we're having with China right now on the rules of rules at sea and freedom of navigation and so on. And so what comes back into a lot of these conversations is things like the exclusive economic zone and the mineral rights and economic opportunities having to do with these zones. Part of the Ocean Blue Economy efforts has a lot of it has to do with planning who will be able to exploit or use what parts of the ocean and who cannot within the EEZs. And of course, in China, in the Asia Pacific case, rather, a lot of this is under dispute. So it's unclear to me exactly which will won't win out the competitive or cooperative dynamics. Both exist, but there's a lot of uncertainty in this relationship, and it has to do with the nature of the ocean. Of course, what we're talking about right now is coastal or near coastal, 200 nautical miles out. I haven't even really addressed the high seas, which is a part of this as well, because, of course, the ocean is it connects us, whether we like it or not. If countries start to fight more over the ocean space, this could be more of a conflict driver than a cooperative driver. But I've been involved in a number of Track 2 conversations with Chinese colleagues. You know, I think we have similar goals, but we have different approaches to developing the ocean or blue economy in a way, particularly having to do with disputed EEZ areas.
So for those that are listening that are interested in this concept, would you say are the short and long-term trends that they should keep an eye on to sort of see how this concept develops?
Yeah, again, with my focus on China, I'm going to be a little bit parochial in that sense. One of the things that I've seen that I think is critically important to the United States and particularly the U.S. Navy is China's plans and recently announced vision for their maritime Silk Road. China, Xi Jinping announced in 2013 a new One Belt, One Road plan. So your listeners might be familiar with that. It's a very ambitious plan to connect China with old parts of the Silk Road, both land-based and sea-based, and extending through Europe and through the Indo-Asia Pacific into Africa. The Maritime Silk Road part of that plan includes this idea of the blue economy in particular and the idea of ocean clusters along the way. So if you see China's One Belt, One Road or Maritime Silk Road map, you'll see there are dots along the route, if you will, where China hopes to develop the Silk Road. Now, there's an action plan that came out in March 2015 that has considerable detail about their plans, which include developing ocean clusters and blue economy zones and so on, special economic zones, marine demonstration zones and so on along this route. So these are taking China's really model of an SEZ, a special economic zone, and then more specialized zones or clusters and developing them overseas. And so this is a strategy that I said, again, is very ambitious. And for the United States and other countries, our allies, partners and friends, the question is whether we'll be a part of that, you know, so cooperating, collaborating with that, have opportunities to invest in and innovate with those particular zones or clusters or not. So that's, I think, a very big question. China just recently, just last month, announced a new maritime vision, they called it, which is even more ambitious. And I think it's important because it really puts Xi Jinping's stamp on this idea that originally was really Hu Jintao's concept of the blue economy. But this new maritime vision, which is not very long, but worth taking a look at, has a number of different initiatives that have the word blue attached to them. So blue partnerships, blue again meaning ocean or maritime or marine, blue partnerships, blue carbon efforts, and various blue economy, marine, maritime efforts, collaborative, innovative, and conservation oriented to some extent. And so the blue economy idea, I think, is going to serve as a carrot in many ways. It's going to be attractive to these other countries along China's proposed maritime Silk Road. And again, I don't see anything in competition with this, at least from the United States. And so I think this is something to keep an important eye on. From reading the detailed plans and policies, it seems to me that these zones or clusters are intended to be very much driven by Chinese investment will be developed through Chinese infrastructure. We'll have Chinese telecommunications systems, possibly Chinese laborers, and very much on the Chinese model. Again, this is not necessarily bad, but it opens questions about how involved the United States, our friends, allies, and others might be involved, might be able to be involved in these. And that's a competitive aspect here, as well as potentially cooperative. And I think the United States or China and its partners, I think that this is going to be somewhat of a race in terms of who can potentially, as I said, exploit these opportunities in a way that does not undermine the conservation aspect that's included in these concepts, because conservation is already a concern. It tends to be more of a developed country rather than developing country priority. And so, there may be a coming clash in that respect. But this is a lot of ungoverned space. And so there's a lot of unknowns and uncertainties. And we'll have to work hard to ensure that if it's competition, then it's a benign competition, an economic industrial competition, not necessarily a conflict type of competition.
So for everyone that's out there, since we're reaching the end of our interview, what sorts of things would you recommend reading? You mentioned a couple of them, but what sort of resources would you recommend that people look into? And then beyond that, are there any other interesting things that you're reading nowadays?
There's a very good study by the OECD that came out in 2016 that looks at the ocean economy out to 2030. It's very in-depth. It's quite long, but pretty easy to read. And I think a good sort of introduction to a lot of these issues and dynamics that are going on, and also with a future orientation to it. Those who have a strategic mind will, I think, find that useful. Those interested more in the economic aspect, the Center for the Blue Economy in Monterey at the Middlebury Institute has a journal actually on this and is worth looking at. They're struggling too with trying to come up with economic metrics to try and measure what the ocean or blue economy is and how much that part of the economy actually contributes to GDP and so on, and doing some of that difficult definitional work. Those interested in particular on the China question, we held the workshop at the Naval War College in late 2014 looking specifically at this question and very basically asking about U.S. and Chinese perspectives on the blue economy and really trying to understand the similarities and differences. And that's available on the War College's website. If you look under the China Maritime Studies Institute, it's a workshop report. The Center for American Progress, a think tank in Washington, D.C., has done a number of studies on both the ocean economy and on U.S.-China issues and Track 2, sort of those informal dialogues. They'll be coming out with a report soon based on a June dialogue that was focused specifically on ocean issues, the blue economy, fisheries, the Arctic, and so on. It's not up yet, but it should be before long. And those interested in the Maritime Silk Road, as I mentioned, the Maritime Vision, it's a white paper that China publicly put out in June, mid-June, June 20th, in fact. That is worth a look, just to have a sense of where a very large economy is looking at promoting new blue partnerships, as I mentioned, and other efforts, not only domestically, but in the Asia-Indo-Pacific region. So if you're studying any of those countries along the way, that's something that you definitely want to both read and then I think monitor as they try to make progress on this plan. In terms of other things I'm reading, because I teach policy analysis, it's been taking up a lot of my time of late. So I've picked up John Farrell's new Nixon biography. I've just gotten into it, as I think many academics do. I'm in the middle of a lot of different books. I'm also just starting the Beautiful Country and the Middle Kingdom by John Pomfret, which I've read great reviews on, but have finally got hold of the book and I'm trying to devour that as well. So I try to both follow the policy issues, the China issues, the innovation issues, and the current policy plans and so on. China has a new blue economy, marine economy, industrial plan out, but I only have the Chinese language version. So I'm busy trying to decipher and translate that as well. So, if you study China, you end up reading a lot of doctrine in English and Chinese. Happily, in the science, technology, innovation realm, a lot of it's in English and very accessible. So that's, I think, what I've been mostly focused on of late.
Wonderful. Well, best of luck to you, Kate. Enjoy a beautiful rest of the summer in Rhode Island. And thanks very much for being on Sea Control.
Thanks, Matt. My pleasure.
That concludes episode 142 of the Sea Control podcast from the Center for International Maritime Security. I'm Matt Marighi, your senior producer for Sea Control. Special thanks to our guest this week, Kate Walsh, and our producer for this episode, Ryan Yulia. If you enjoyed this episode and you haven't already yet subscribed to Sea Control, please do. Subscribing gives you automatic access to all of our episodes as they become available. And if you really like us, go on over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and tell all of your friends to tune in. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on Sea Control.